week's material world.
First, though, a star turn from Howard Keel.
This is my quest, to follow that star, no matter how hopeless, no matter how poor.
We've been following stars and using them to lead us since the dawn of man, or at least since the first night after the first dawn. The Greeks and Romans played celestial join the dots, and it's still their constellations that many of us see in the sky. There's hardly an ancient civilization that didn't find time to weave a myth or two around some of those bright night lights. But when, where, and why did we first attempt to accurately map the heavens? Were such charts used in conjunction with superstitions and horoscopes? Were they more for navigation? All I ask is a tall ship and a star to steer her by, and that sort of thing. Or was it simply early astronomers meticulously giving a name to every fixed star? These and many other questions have all been raised by the discovery that the oldest manuscript star chart known could be over 3 centuries older than had previously been believed. The chart goes on display tomorrow at the British Library as part of their new exhibition on the Silk Road, which may give a clue as to where it's from. With me to map the mapping of stars from the deep past to the near future, Dr. Jean-Marc Bonnet-Bideau from the French Atomic Energy Commission in Paris, who's been involved in establishing the origins of this oldest star chart, and Dr. Simon Mitten, historian of astronomy and fellow of the Royal Astronomical Society. Simon Mitten, let's just start by getting our celestial bearings. This star chart that Jean-Marc's been working on, is it the undisputed oldest one, or are there a whole constellation of other candidates?
It's the undisputed oldest star map which represents the entire sky that's come down to the present day. It's an accurate representation. That is what their research has shown. Now, of course, there are earlier representations of constellations. One can go back to Egyptian times and find these in ceiling paintings and so on, and representations of the zodiac and of individual constellations. But in terms of putting together the whole sky in an accurate visual form, this map, which is now being dated at the very beginning of the 8th century, is undisputedly the oldest one that's come down to us. It's probably based on or copied from earlier charts that have not survived, so it's not the very first one that was produced.
Okay, we'll get on to how it was dated in due course. But Jean-Marc Bonnet-Bideau, so where's it from, and how long have we known about its existence?
Well, we know this existence from about more than 100 years. It was found in Dunhuang, in Gobi Desert.
And China.
In China, of course, yes.
I'm sure everybody knows Gobi Desert, isn't it, just in case? Yeah.
And it has a chance to be preserved very, very nicely by the climate there, which is the first point. And second point, it was preserved because it was in a closed grotto, and it was not open till 1899. So from about the year 1000 to 1899, it was closed in a closed environment, dry environment, so very well preserved.
Did it have this whole grotto to itself?
Pardon me?
Did it have the whole grotto to itself? Was it just sitting there as the sole chart in this cave?
In this grotto were about several thousand manuscripts. And it was only one of them was really this chart of astronomical contents.
And how long have we realized its significance, that it is indeed the oldest?
Well, it was realized early enough because I think Joseph Needham, which is a very well-known sinologist, dated first from 940. But now we reanalyze this chart and try to collect all the information available also in China, in Chinese language, and we arrive in a slightly different dates.
And you just happen to speak fluent Chinese as well, don't you, I believe?
No, that is unfortunate for me, but I know a little bit of China. Chinese. I was in China for 2 years in Beijing, so I learned a little bit. But I'm collaborating with Chinese scholar in China,
and
they helped me a lot.
What does it look like? I mean, I always imagine star charts looking like the one I had on my wall when I was a child, which is, you know, predominantly blue black background. This is next to the Farrah Fawcett poster, by the way. Predominantly blue black background, and little white dots with nice neat labels to indicate stars and constellations. Is it the same thing even thousands of years ago?
Maybe not that much details, but it's very, very nice document. It's altogether about 1,345 stars. Group in about 250 asterisks. We call that asterisk because this is a Chinese constellation. Very small.
Asterisms.
Yeah.
Right.
Very small constellation, sometimes one or two stars, which form a tiny constellation in terms of Chinese culture. And all of that is on a long wall and in different panels. And the real impressive fact in this chart is that it is represented as we make the chart now when we want to make them clear, like by panel, just section of sky. And because we have a slight, very big distortion at the pole, then we make a separate chart to represent the pole. This is what we do for representing the Earth, for instance.
So the Chinese had a very sophisticated idea of mapping a 3D sky onto a 2D chart.
For me, this is the most impressive fact, is that they use what is now called a Mercator projection. Mercator was a geographer in the 16th century. And so at that time, we adopted this method of representing the sky and the Earth when we have to project the sphere on the plane.
Obviously, if we'd known about this first, it might not have ever been called Mercator projection. It might have been called ancient Chinese astronomer projection, because they clearly got there first. How accurate is it? I mean, when actually compared to the reality?
We try to evaluate that right now. This is why I come into this subject, because I'm an astronomer, but I want to apply a scientific method to qualify this precision in the chart. We make computation, compare the position of the star on the maps to the real position of the sky, and try to evaluate this precision. It is quite hard work to do, because the map is not really done in a very systematic way. Sometimes I guess the man who do the chart makes some extra dots.
A few little doodles somewhere.
You see, it's more than 1,000 years ago. But all together, I think we are quite confident to evaluate, at least to give an idea of the precision. And it is very impressive in some part of the chart already.
And what's led you to the conclusion that it's much older than had previously been suspected?
Different facts. We collect, like I told you, work was done in China. And some of this work shown that there's two facts. First, the Chinese has very strange habit. When there was an emperor, you could not use the name of the emperor anywhere in any kind of text, the word of his name, the characters. So they were called taboo characters.
All right.
So when in a text, you see evidently that there was a permutation of the terms and choose another character, you try to figure out that this was because of the emperor at that time. So this gives an idea of the about 705 for the maps, if we believe in this taboo character.
Yeah. Simon, I don't want to treat you as a taboo character here, so I should ask, how important are such charts to modern astronomy? Is it just more of historical curiosity?
This one speaks to us of the great accuracy with which these Chinese astronomers were working, and it is another piece of evidence of how seriously astronomical observation was taken for 2,000 years nearly by Chinese astronomers. I mean, these guys were ahead of Christian Europe in their astronomical thinking and training until about the 16th century.
I suppose it makes a case for astronomy as one of, if not the most ancient of sciences.
Yes, and certainly in terms of the practitioners were what today we would call government civil servants. I mean, they were officers of the court advising the emperor. So it's good to have this evidence of how they worked and the position of astronomy and astrology in the emperor's court.
And when did we first start getting decent Western star charts?
Well, we have the best that's come down to us from ancient times is Ptolemy's, which is about 140 AD. It's not until the 16th century, really, that you start to get very accurate representations of the constellations in printed atlases showing the whole of the sky.
Jean-Marc, do we know? We say civil servants would have been these astronomers. What were they using it for?
Well, they were observing with naked eyes, but they were using.
So it was just it was a catalogue as much as anything of what they saw.
Yeah, they observed very carefully, like Simon just told. They were anxious about what happened in the sky. It is completely different from the Greek point of view. Chinese wanted to see what is different in the sky, while Greek wanted to say it is perfect sky.
So for that, they spent hours and hours trying to find out which comets, which star, new star appears, and they note, they write down everything for many, many years, over centuries.
Is this because of the philosophical differences between the,
yes, exactly.
the Greeks who had the gods in the heavens and the Chinese who see the sky as sort of mirroring Earth, a heaven, whole
this
heaven and Earth?
This is exactly the picture.
Yeah. One of the points is, Quentin, that the transient phenomena, which is the unexpected appearance of comets, the explosions of stars, which then lead to what we now call novae or supernovae, these were very important. And I guess that what Jean-Luc has found out is that this accurate map then, of course, gave you the equivalent of a coordinate system for saying whereabouts in the sky is this happening. Where is this comet coming from? Where is it moving to? And
this
so on.
This is exactly the case. I think the quality of the... We just talked about the small asteroids, small constellation. They are so tiny that they just pinpoint exactly where you want to know and the object was. You say just this constellation. It was not a very big constellation that we have with the Greek culture, but just a small part of the sky. It was a way to give coordinates without giving numbers.
That's right.
But would this also be useful? I mean, would there be predictive uses for sort of horoscopes, whatever? Would there be navigational uses as well?
No, it was political science. Yes. I mean, it is really, I mean, everything which happened to in the sky has a correspondency on the Earth. Every part of the sky has a correspondency with a part of the Chinese Empire. And if something happened, you have to, I mean, at least astronomer has to say, what does it mean? And sometimes it was a way to rule the country. If a new star appears, to say, well, this man is not behaving correctly because in his part of the empire, it doesn't mean something good.
So because the sky is mostly fairly stable, that's always very good because that's a sort of portent of stability. But every now and again, when you get a comet or an eclipse or whatever, ooh, blimey, that's a terrible omen.
Exactly, exactly. And it was a very, very big consequence on the life, politically speaking, in China. Some emperor were dismissed because of just a new comet.
Presumably, Simon, this presumably helps us because when they write down about these ancient phenomena, we can map that onto our what we know happened in the universe back then and sort of see, oh, that's that comet or that was that supernova.
That's correct. Famously, the first recording of what we now call Halley's Comet was made by Chinese astronomers in the 2nd century BC.
So again, they could have taken the name off us. And how differently do we chart the skies now, Simon? I guess it's certainly not done by sight observations anymore.
Well, one of the surveys which is going on at the moment is at the Apache Point Observatory in New Mexico using a 2.5-meter telescope. This is the Sloan Digital Sky Survey, which is recording the positions of millions of galaxies and also getting information on their velocities of recession, their redshift, which in turn carries distance information. So this Sloan Digital Sky Survey, one of its outcomes will be to be able to produce an accurate three-dimensional map of millions and millions of galaxies going far out into the universe. This is an absolutely tremendous achievement in terms of understanding the dynamics of our universe and how things are moving and what's driving the expansion along and is the expansion uniform or accelerating.
Just today, finally, in the New Scientist, I noticed there's a story about how Aussie astronomers have found a whole other arm to our galaxy. And the opening words of this story are, the map of the Milky Way is being redrawn. I mean, is that a bit of journalistic license, or is it a sign that perhaps we still need to, we're still always refining our methods?
This is the kind of thing which is going on as a result of these modern digital surveys, which are able to harvest tens of thousands of positions a night, and therefore you can make rapid progress in mapping out specific parts of the sky, as you've pointed out.
Dr. Simon Mitten and Jean-Marc Bonnet-Bideau, thanks for being as constant as the Northern Star. The Silk Road, with a star turn from that oldest chart of the night sky, opens tomorrow at the British Library. There's more on this, including links to an online exhibition of 50,000 manuscripts and other artefacts from along the Silk Road, at our webpages, www.bbc.co.uk/radio4/materialworld.